This episode is brought to you by the Sexton Single Malt Irish Whiskey, the best-selling Irish single malt in the U.S. The Sexton is an unexpected modern malt for the everyman, rich in hue, approachable in taste, and memorable in character. Learn more at thesexton.com.
Hi, I'm Moxie Rosenbloom. My dad, Harry Rosenbloom, hosts Feast Your Ears on Heritage Radio Network. Right now, HRN is having a summer membership drive. Becoming a member is so easy, and you'll help support shows like my dad's. You can sign up for a one-time donation or become a monthly sustaining member by visiting heritageradionetwork.org/donate. Let's keep food radio on the airwaves this summer.
I'm HRN's Executive Director, Katie Mosman-Wadler, with a preview of this week's episode of Meat and Three, HRN's weekly food news roundup. This week, we're celebrating Pride. We speak to the bakers who created a custom wedding cake for Charlie Craig and David Mullins, the couple behind the Masterpiece Cake Shop Supreme Court case.
We felt that what happened to Charlie and David was an absolute injustice.
Kat Johnson addresses the controversy surrounding Anthony Porosky, Queer Eye's food and wine expert.
Many viewers thought these recipes were unsophisticated.
And finally, Hannah Forden speaks with nutrition educator Leah Kurtz about the relationship between veganism and queer identity.
It's an interesting way in which food can challenge invisible value systems even greater than sexuality does.
Listen to Meat and Three, that's M-E-A-T plus sign T-H-R-E-E, this week, and celebrate Pride with HRN. Available on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and your favorite listening apps.
You've heard the noise they make, but let me introduce my new Rocket 88. Yes, it's straight, just one way. Everybody likes my Rocket.
All right, welcome back to the Main Course OG. It's June 21st. That was Rocket 88, credited as the first rock and roll song ever recorded. And the Main Course is the first Heritage Radio Network show ever recorded. So we're connected in that way. I'm very excited. We have a little bit of a new format. It's an exciting format. It's a more fast format. I think everyone's going to be very happy with this format. And we got the best guest we could, by far, the best guest we could have ever wished for to welcome in this new format, Daniel Sklar.
Hey.
Owner of Fine and Raw Chocolates in Bushwick.
A lot of pressure on that introduction there.
He's our neighbor. So let's just get into this new format. I'm very excited. Brazil is tied. They tied their first match. They're in the second match tomorrow at 8 a.m. Vitor, our engineer, is from Brazil, like my family is. So we're both very excited. We're a little worried about Neymar's injury, but we think he should be fine. So without further ado, I am in studio with Elizabeth Greeley, Emily Pearson, Mike Edison, and Daniel. Let's go. Let's roll.
Great. Thank you, Patrick. And so as Patrick said, we have a great show for you today, and we changed up the format. The weekly base segment will be longer, so we can get an even more relevant food topics that our panelists don't know the specifics of, so we can see how they perform off the cuff. Then we have the Maillard reaction section where we ask our question to our panelists, and we're talking all things chocolate today in the Weekly Grill with Daniel from Fine and Raw. So we'll jump right into it. The New York Times now sells food kits delivered to your door. They advertise these in their food section. Has anyone seen those?
Are they actually being sold by the New York Times, not a third party? I haven't seen it.
That was my question, too.
Because they do a lot of advertorial in the New York Times.
The entire back page of the food section this week was advertising for their meal kits.
But who's fulfilling the orders?
It doesn't matter. It's a New York Times meal kit. That is branded the New York Times. Of course, they're not doing that out of their warehouse on 43rd.
So what is it? Some like liberal oatmeal and some like fake failing kale salad?
Well, that's a good question, because is it sourced from companies that they write about? Is that food? You know, is it organic and heritage? Is it the New York Times of food, or is it commodity food?
Let's order one for next week.
And do they not write about heritage foods? Vibrant mail order campaign, perhaps, because they have their own one that they have goals and objectives, to meet certain standards of money each year.
That's true. Is it conflict of interest? What are the standards that they're upholding in the products? And should a newspaper be selling food?
I mean, I wonder if artists think the same thing. I mean, I have a beautiful American Indian on a horse poster that my wife bought from the New York Times, and I love it, but is that a conflict of interest with, you know, their arts section? Like, should a newspaper be in the business of mail order?
They're probably just looking.
I think a lot of media companies are realizing that there's other outlets, there's other channels where they can be profitable. And we all know newspapers don't make a lot of money, notoriously. But I don't know. I don't know. Do their editors vet the products that go into the box? Does it mean that they have a conflict of interest in terms of writing about something else?
Is the meat in there from U.S. Foods? Was it fed antibiotics? You know, is it a heritage breed, or is it a breed that grows so fast that it suffers? Where, you know, the vegetable in it, you know, were those people paid minimum wage? You know, a lot of questions.
Well, the people who own Whole Foods own the Washington Post, and the fellow who owns them both owns that little thing called Amazon.
Well, yeah, the paper shouldn't be selling that as a Washington Post product. They should be selling Whole Foods products in there, but if they buy advertising.
Well, hopefully it's not fake food to go with their fake news.
I don't know. I'd like to try one. Let's see.
Yeah, we'll see. What's the next story?
Yeah, Emily, buy one. Report
I think you back. Should. I think you should buy one. Let's have a go at it.
Yeah,
not with Heritage money.
So Politico reports that after a 3-year legal battle, foam food and beverage containers may soon be a thing of the past in New York City. The city law department said in a statement, "This ruling clears the path towards implementing a ban on food service foam products that will protect New York City's environment and our recycling program."
I'm against it. No,
oh,
just kidding.
Stop. It's about fucking time. Seriously, what took them so long? I mean, we've known for years this stuff is bad. It doesn't biodegrade. I've heard for years and years and years about bans on styrofoam. And I don't know, it's just convenience that people haven't stopped doing it in these non-biodegradable containers that food comes in. It should have stopped years ago.
No, I'm with Mike. I actually thought it did, except for the occasional like Greek restaurant and the halal, the street carts. There's certain key like food vendors that I think of styrofoam containers when I think about it.
I think of Dunkin' Donuts. They're still using styrofoam. And then the egg containers. But Dunkin' Donuts uses it.
I mean, I think, do the substitutes work as well? Like, my mom always used to say, why would I buy, like, 7th-generation paper towels where I need to use 15 of the towels to soak up a little
Bounty.
Puddle?
Bounty. Just one sheet.
Oh, just one sheet with the Bounty. Also, biodegradable forks that they use at fancy events where you stick the fork into the pizza and it melts. And then you have plastic all in your pizza. If it doesn't work as well, I mean, the objective of a styrofoam container is to keep the stuff at temp, whatever temp it was sold at. So I don't know. If the substitutes don't work, then really, why should we support it?
You would a biodegradable fork melt at a cocktail party?
Yes. They don't, they're not
how much,
as good as...
How acid did you take?
Yeah, we're like very concerned
paper,
with temperature.
It's like those paper straws. Like, you have 2 sips of your drink, and it's
a
just...
Good,
like
I that. Love a paper straw, but it has to be a bendy straw. I'm very into bendy straws. But plastic straws are another thing. It's just got to stop. Like, enough already. And those, and even a plastic bag at the supermarket, that should cost, like, $5,000 every time you get one. You should have to bring a cloth bag to the supermarket. Like, enough.
That's actually another story. Let's jump to that story. Tell us about the $10,000 milkshake. I mean, you want to pay $10,000 for a bag?
Oh, okay. All right.
$10,000 better come with a happy ending.
So, legendary New York City restaurant Serendipity 3 receives Guinness World Record for most expensive milkshake in the world yesterday on National Vanilla Milkshake Day. By the way, I did not know it was National Vanilla Milkshake Day. I missed that.
So, it was ironic very that you sad. Were actually drinking a couple of them at the office. That
wish.
Was just coincidence.
Of course. The luxurious concoction is served in a custom milkshake glass adorned with over 3,000 premium Swarovski crystals designed by master artist Kelly DeFries, the Crystal Ninja. It costs over $100.
No, no, no. It's at $1,000. That's a typo. My printer ran out of ink.
$1,000. All right, all right.
So I like this. Guinness Book of World Records is the global authority on record-breaking achievement. First published in 1955, the iconic book has sold over 141 million copies in 21 languages and more than 100 countries. I just think I love. I used to read the Guinness Book of World Records from 1978. Every day.
It was the best when we were kids.
Only the first few pages.
And the weirdo things, like the guy that was on a pogo stick for like 36 weeks. You know, like the really oddball records.
Those things bothered me a little bit, and I think this is an example of it. I love the fat guy that was buried in the piano case. I love the two fat twins on the motorcycles. And, of course, the tallest guy and all that. But now anyone could do anything. You chew the same piece of gum for 6 months, and you're like, I'm in the Guinness Book of World Records. Like, aren't there standards?
Wasn't that the girl in Willy Wonka? Erica Salt, wasn't she the one that wanted to chew the piece of gum for the longest or something?
Oh, really?
And so we saw how that turned out.
She was the one that turned into a blueberry, right?
She turned purple.
Didn't have a
happy
ending.
Stayed purple. Or no?
Oh, she's the one that, she's the one whose face turned purple.
But forever. Then
until no, they I think came and fixed.
We found a cure for that now.
Oh, really?
Speaking of milkshakes, you make milkshakes at Fine and Raw.
Oh, yeah.
What do you think about a $100 milkshake?
No, it's $1,000.
Oh, $1,000.
That's a little, does it come with a trip to, I'm not sure about the happy ending, but maybe like a trip to Bermuda or something.
Yeah.
There should be, what is the, where's the value?
I think you're paying for the glass.
Yeah.
Oh, you get to keep it.
Well, I don't know, but.
I would keep it if I wasn't supposed to.
A limited edition crystal.
Exactly.
Created by monkeys in Mongolia.
Or little children in Thailand. How much is a milkshake or, you know, your chocolate drinks?
Are they like $8 to $12?
It's a bargain.
Oh. Yeah.
Okay, side note. I read somewhere they tried to do the largest orgy for the Guinness World Record, but enough people didn't show up. That current one stays. I had just seen that. I don't know why I knew that, but... More fun Guinness World Record.
What? Do we have more details?
Yeah. No, what was the current record?
I didn't read the whole article. Even that title didn't get me. But
I will say Serendipity was the most fun restaurant to go to. It was 60th between like 3rd and 2nd, or you know, real part of the city that you wouldn't go too much. But man, it was fun. They had like foot long hot dogs and massive sundaes and
they're known
all these
for their
toys.
Frozen hot chocolate is what become famous for.
That was back in the day where that was a place that people went to. Now there's probably 5,000 Serendipities and 500 cities and $10,000 drinks. But anyway, it was a great time. Place.
Hence this Hail Mary of $1,000. Milkshake.
Well,
Mike, you got them pressed.
Now you got stoned and did pay for that $10,000 milkshake, which brings us, you were so stoned, you were so hungry, you actually shelled out $10,000. Brings us to our next two stories.
Yeah, we have some great pot topics that were really, we had you in mind
for Mike
when we picked these.
Former editor of High Times, Mike Edison.
Yeah, I really got my ear to the ground in the weed department.
So most New Yorkers caught smoking pot in public will be issued summons rather than arrested starting September 1st. And Mayor Bill de Blasio and Police Commissioner James O'Neill announced this Tuesday. And this is from the New York Post. So that's what's going on in the U.S. and Canada, our neighbors to the north. The Post also reports that Canada's Senate gave final passage Tuesday to the federal government's bill to legalize cannabis, though Canadians will have to wait at least a couple of months to legally buy. So they're ahead of us.
Way ahead.
So I went to school in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and the law, you know, the pot law was basically similar to this new York law. It was more of like a slap on the wrist and you got a $25 fine. But there was no issue. You were never getting arrested for smoking pot.
Unless you were black, in which case the local police department would put you in jail for life.
And that's pretty much it. That's what they don't tell you about this. They've been saying that for a while. They're not going to prosecute minor pot busts. Possession's always been a misdemeanor. It was always a traffic ticket. The people are going to arrest are the people that are, unfortunately, of color, largely men of color, who already have a record because they're going to run you through the system and see that you have some outstanding warrant and they're going to put you in jail.
Can you tell us the history of how pot laws started? Wasn't it like jazz guys in the 20s?
Well, the laws originally were racist. And it was always, the drug laws always were as a way to control parts of the population, black people and Chinese people. That was the opium laws. it's always been crowd control. And of course, going after jazz musicians was just one example. We can dedicate a whole show to potwells if you want, the whole history of it. But, you know, I mean, normally, I remember when I was growing up, I mean, if everybody would ever stop me, one time a cop stopped me smoking a joint on the street, he just sort of gave me a dirty look and asked me to move along. Mm-hmm. You know, not on my beat, pal.
As a white guy on the Upper East Side, I could like flick my joint into a cop's eye and he wouldn't do anything. I mean, no, it was like totally double standards.
But do you think this law that's being passed in September 1st is a step forward, or you're just saying it's not going
to? No, I think it's a step forward that they're saying it out loud. I think it's very important that they understand that in the war on drugs, the drugs basically won. You know, it's just a bad policy to arrest a lot of people for minor, what's a really, really benign crime.
Is it a gateway?
A gateway drug?
Yeah, I mean, that's what most, you know, conservative people would argue.
That theory has been debunked so many times.
Yeah.
The real gateway drugs, I mean, honestly, are tobacco and alcohol. They will lead to lead you to smoking pot, for instance.
Because you become cool for smoking cigarettes, and then next thing is pot.
You know, there's not a lot of upside to smoking tobacco. They always say that the tobacco, if you start on tobacco, you're going to end up doing, you know, when you're a kid, you know, in terms of gateway drugs, but it's always alcohol, tobacco. Pot smokers don't turn to heroin.
Those are upbeat drugs, right? I mean, like cocaine's an up drug. Pot's just like a mellow out drug. Everyone wants it.
Do you think that the laws are also sparked by the use of the the electronic, the e-pens, the oil?
That's dubious.
Oh.
Vitor, where's the sound effect? Of?
The Juul. I'm sorry. I don't think people look... Like, a cigarette looks cooler smoking than that Juul.
I'm talking about because so many people walk down the street using
the whole city smells like pot these days.
It does.
Like, the whole city smells like weed because everybody's, like, vaping, you know, these, like, hash oil.
That's the thing. Gimmicks. Emily, you said it. What was that line you said? Like, you don't know if everyone could be smoking pot. I mean, people wake up in the morning in the subway. They're just vaping. I mean, that could be pot. No one knows anymore.
No, it's true. Every morning on the subway platform, like the G and the L, there's a few people with the e-pens in their hand. And the tobacco ones are these, like, massive things, usually. Or some of them are small. And then I'm like, everybody's high at 8 a.m.
Yeah,
but
what's
they're
happening?
Just so extra casual these days. At least before they
were. No, it smells like weed. I mean, those e-pens. I mean, it's the vape is not completely odorless. You tell when someone's getting stoned. There's always somebody getting stoned on the subway because they think they can get away with it.
All right. Well, there's clearly a lot to talk about here. But moving on, CNBC.
Are you stoned now, Libby?
You know what?
Yeah.
Sadly,
she can't,
no.
You can't stick on the thought. We're already on our fifth story today. God.
Are you laughing out of context? Because that's a sign of drug abuse.
By the way, we're going to continue to cover pot. I mean, Mike was the former editor of High Times. That's not a joke. Very interesting. And I think there's a lot of business opportunities other than just growing pot. I mean, I always thought there'll be like one day like a wine spectator.
But
for pot, you know, where they rank pots, but also where you can keep getting the same pot from the same terroir, you know, kind of thing.
Are there those things, Mike?
It does exist.
Yeah. No, I think there is a connoisseur magazine. And also, I do the marijuana chocolate line for Willie Nelson, and I've gone into the industry quite a lot, and highly specialized. People geek out on, like, strains, varietals, exactly what they do, hybrids, this, that. I mean, which is great. I mean, when I get high, how do you tell the difference? But apparently they can. I'm not a connoisseur of such things. Choose wine and chocolate, different story.
Will say most pot smokers cannot duplicate their high because they're not getting pot from the same place. I mean, I think once it becomes legal, there will be the Napa Valley of pot. There'll be certain, you know, the Cabernet Sauvignons, the Merlots.
Well, you're all about genetics. That's what you saw when, you know, in Heritage Meats. Very similar with Reefer, the guy that I get my weed from, their company. I mean, they tell you, and I believe them, that, you know, what strain of sativa or indica or hybrid I'm smoking, and I do compare them, and I do kind of make mental notes. And you know, the indica is more, you know, mellow, of course, traditionally, and the sativa is kind of like makes you want to get out the finger paints and play with the echo machine and run around the house naked. And, you know, the indica is like, okay, let's, you know, lay on the couch and watch Bugs Bunny for a few hours. Let's go back to the part where you're making chocolate for Willie Nelson.
Yeah.
We're going to have a meeting about this a little bit later.
Anytime. They're amazing.
Mike, your day-to-day activities are very hilarious. Finger painting, watching Bugs Bunny, like, okay.
But we are going to bring up this Willie Nelson thing during the interview part with Daniel, because that sounds fascinating.
When's the last time you finger painted?
Not. I need to be doing more of it.
Yeah.
You went to a wine and painting class last week.
I did pottery. Through wheels. Yes, that was fun. All right. CNBC reports Danny Meyer and cashless restaurant proposal faces criticism. We know that. Some have raised concerns about the socioeconomic implications of operating a cashless business, Meyer said in the Post. By not accepting cash, a restaurant may be excluding prospective guests who do not have a bank account, and we might be inconveniencing guests who simply don't have their credit debit card on them at the time. That's certainly not our aim.
I mean, he's honest. He's like, we realize that we might be, I don't want to use the word discriminating because that seems so harsh, but you know, that they might be separating a certain group of people that just don't have their credit card on them or don't have a bank account. But at the end of the day, I think for these fast casual businesses, it's about flow and pace. And if they're able to do, you know, get 10 people through the line in the time that it would normally take two when you're making change and someone's searching for their pennies, you know, you do what you got to do. You win some, you lose some.
Well, the days of money are over. I mean, I think it's totally not correct to go cashless. You still have to keep that option. I think maybe you could incentivize people not to use cash. I mean, cash is dirty. People have to walk. Some employee has to walk to and from the bank with all this cash. I mean, it's dangerous. And yeah, it's just yucky. Although I was on the highways in Florida and there's no more toll people. There's no more cash being exchanged. And what
here
the
too,
hell?
You're it's almost completely gone in New York also. I borrowed your car recently and I didn't have Easy Pass, and that's why you got a bill in the mail.
No, it's all by license plate now. I know. You don't need that little device anymore. But it was kind of upsetting to me. You know, I think about some migrant farm worker who's driving and can't drive on the highway system in America. That's not right.
Or have the tasting menu at Gramercy Tavern.
Well, I mean, you can't presume that they're not going to go and spend money on a special occasion. Pasta Flyer doesn't accept cash, and that's fast food.
No, it is true. I will say there are some people that prefer to just deal in cash, and they don't like, I mean, there's some people that just also don't believe in banks and they don't want to have a credit card, or they like to know that they can go and spend the money that they physically have in their pocket. So, you know, I do respect that. I think having a cash option, or maybe there's a cash lane at Shake Shack, you know, but I don't know. I appreciate that Danny Meyer is sort of just saying like, look, this is what we're doing. We're giving it a try. We're not trying to discriminate against anyone, but this is what works for us.
Yeah, the anonymity of cash is really important, I think, to a lot of people. But the ease of not using cash in a business, wow.
Yeah, 100%. But then you have some fees, right, that you have to pay, credit card fees. But then by going to the bank and all that, you have employee fees that you have to pay.
But I was reading, there was an article in addition to the CNBC one, I think Danny Meyer posted on his LinkedIn or something, and said that... Oh, no, I just lost my train of thought. That's terrible on radio. He said that, at the end of the night, or when employees are changing shifts, you don't have to worry about, like, closing out the register. So there's a lot of different reasons from back-of-house purposes as well as to why it makes sense.
Completely.
Yeah, well, price theft as well. You know, the draw's never short because you don't...
I never have cash, but, you know, I still defend for the right for people who need to, you know, want to buy a friggin' hamburger for $3 to, you know, be able to have $3. Homeless people, they could go in and want to, you know, get a donut, and they can't. They can't shop.
That's a really
places.
Good point. You know, they've collected, you know, $3, and what are they doing? Trading it in for
They're eating less healthy food as a result.
They're not going to Shake Shack.
But they should. They should be able to.
What's going to happen when the grid comes down? Because it's coming back down. You know it is.
The cloud is going to crash.
Seriously, the whole grid's coming down. The internet's coming down. We're one cyber attack short of like a national disaster. Hey, it's no joke. I mean, I've lived my life through three major blackouts in New York City. And we know what happens with this blackout? Credit cards don't work. I keep cash in hand.
That's why he keeps his $300 savings in his mattress.
I keep cash in hand in the house.
Me too.
You know, also gold bullion, because I figure when the shit really hits the fan, that's what you're going to need, your specie. The paper money is not going to be worth anything. And if you want to get on the spaceship and leave the planet, they're going to be taking gold.
Yeah, or I know you'll probably blow it on the bagel and cream cheese. You're like, how many gold
bullion? But you should, I strongly advise people to keep cash on hand in their houses, because that was a thing last blackout. I mean, ATM machines didn't work.
Blackout and Hurricane Sandy, everyone that lives south of 14th Street had to come north of 14th just to use use an ATM.
Oh my God. My neighborhood, 28th Street, where I lived at the time, I lost my power for like 8 days. It was the last neighborhood in New York to get power. And I mean, I had to walk across town to take a shower, to use the internet, you know, like really far. It was like crazy. But I couldn't use my credit card in my neighborhood within like 10 blocks in any direction. There's still power out 8 days later. No credit cards, no ATM machines. Okay. This is also a good reason to have like a line of credit at your local bar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, something sure. to think about, Mike. All right, so the world's 50 best restaurants list was announced last night, and 11 Madison Park was bumped from the top spot. Emily will take us through this list.
Because she's the only one that can pronounce the restaurants. Yeah.
Question is, can I pronounce the one in Spain? I am not sure. Anyway, the top spot went to Massimo Bottura's restaurant, Osteria Francescana in Modena. I was on the wait list last time I was there. Did not get in. Very upset. Hmm. Definitely seems to deserve the number one spot. Then number two is El Saler de Can Roca. That was definitely wrong. In Girona, Spain. Mirazor in Menton, France. Then 11 Madison Park is number four, and Gagan in Bangkok rounds out for the top five. But there's a list of top 50, and then they also did 51 through 100.
Did any of our restaurants? I saw Ko on there.
Ko is in the 51 to 100 range. I'm trying to remember who else is on the list.
Did Blanca make it, or any of Danny Meyer's restaurants?
I don't think any of Danny Meyer's. I think Per Se is still on the list.
Why isn't Roberta's number one?
I don't know. Right in.
Those restaurants are so absurd. I mean, there's all of them are guys, with the exception of three people. You know, all of them are white, with the exception of two or three people. And today, ingredients are not that hard to come by. Claro has just as good dish as 11 Madison Park. I think it should be the best dish or the best bite. Because then everyone, and it could be a taco truck. But those guys, of course, don't want to do that because they don't want to be responsible to actually have to cover the entire world, you know?
Well, this particular list is also truly dedicated to fine dining.
It's about service.
Yeah, so it's the package deal. I think it's the wine, the service, the ingredients, the sort of elegance of the entire experience. But I did read something that, in response to adding more women to the list, I think they just made a secondary, like, best female chefs of the world, instead of making an effort to combine women in more.
That's more humiliating.
Yeah, it's like best female authors or something. It's just saying that women need a separate category. I mean,
hey, I asked to play in the NBA and they made the WNBA instead.
The WNBA in New York, did you hear they got bumped out of Madison Square Garden? They play in Westchester now in like a little 2,000 person arena. I mean, I think that's just because they weren't selling enough tickets. But women are making great food, and it is, I think,
obviously
a sexist business.
Great women chefs in the world. It shouldn't be two lists.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. Two lists.
So that's humiliating. Yeah, no, that's right. But, you know, in the old days, you know, things were harder to come by. Nowadays, like I say, great food is everywhere, you know, and so these lists are less. I mean, that's why fine dining is collapsing, not because of the expense. It's because you can eat just as well.
That's
anyway,
true.
So.
All right. Vice published an article about their last big feature interview with Anthony Bourdain. The interview lasted 4 hours, and it was held at
Bemelman's.
Thank you. In the Carlisle Hotel. Patrick, did you know that you and Tony have similar taste? But for Anthony Bourdain, a gin martini was protocol here. Tony called his with Bombay Sapphire, that blue jewel of the not-so-distant past, and an extra olive. One of my favorite moments in the interview was when he explains, I'm not ordinarily a martini drinker. A martini is a bad lifestyle choice. It's not my drink of choice. But this is the sort of place that demands a martini. They make a very good one, a very large one, and I plan on a long nap after this. So there's little chance of bad decision making.
Is it a bad lifestyle choice? Patrick, you do love a gin Gibson.
When I know the bartender, and it's a great bartender, I will go and tell them what I did that day and how I'm feeling, and they will craft the perfect cocktail. I might tell them the liquor I want, and there's no questions asked. But when people do not know the bartender, or when I don't know the bartender, I cannot stand the people asking for the menu, and the waiter finally comes and ready for the order, and they're like, can we see the menu? I'm like, you don't know your drink yet? Negroni. Manhattan. martini. You know, those are the main drinks.
Well, everybody's got a variation on the Manhattan these days.
And I don't mind that.
There's always some weird variation of some, like, bizarre bitter replacing with vermouth or...
All right, on this note, I want to know what everyone's... What is your drink when the
waiter
comes?
Mine's a Jim Gibson, 100% of the time, unless I know the bartender.
I like a perfect Manhattan, straight up and with a twist, and I like it made with rye.
And I do go Negroni if Gibson is just... I'm totally not in the mood for Jim Gibson.
This is a hard question.
Need a menu?
Yeah, I'm the menu girl, Patrick and Amy. But Moscow Mules are good.
Dark and Stormy. That's everyone's fine drink if they don't really like cocktails. Go to Dark and Stormy.
My safety net these days is an Old Fashioned.
Nice.
Oof. That's a good one.
Daniel, what's yours?
I'm a little bit of a purist. I don't go into cocktails. Let's just get something neat.
Something neat. What's good... Or I'll have a beer. Oh, my God. Learn a drink. And then also learn the name of a drink. Also, another thing about wine, pick a region. And then all of a sudden you look like an expert. You're like, I love Valtellina. Or I love Piedmont. Boom, you're going to get a great wine. If you're red.
But that goes to trusting a bartender or trusting a server. And I think that goes back to staff education. That, like, if they need to be prepared, if you come in and you say, oh, I like this particular region, but... Hey, you walked into a French restaurant.
But at least you're giving
not an Italian restaurant. True. They need to know the comps, and I think that is always the sign of a good service.
In France, I always get the Bandol Tempierre, and then if they don't have that, they're going to give me a good wine because you have to memorize 3 or 4 wine regions of the world, and you're safe. And no offense to South Africa or Australia, but I don't know if those wines are ever the top wines.
Well, I'll tell you what,
they're good.
If we were on a date, Patrick, if you and I were on a date, and you ordered.
A beer.
A martini. Gin or vodka. And didn't call the brand, okay? And you're going to be willing to drink, like, well vodka in a martini? That's strike one. You're probably not going to...
I always do Hendrix.
That is like... Because I just figure if I'm going to pick
That's the reason I'm not coming home.
Mike has standards.
It's a huge try. I figure if you made it somehow to be 40 years old, and I'm taking you out on a date, and you order a drink and don't call the name of the vodka, then the beautiful dinner I'm about to buy for you is going to be lost on you. It's a waste. It's like starting like one pitch behind in the count, okay?
By the way, I did write this on my notes as we were talking. The martini is like the margarita of cocktails. It's a very low margin of error, and you see the guy does a good job.
All right.
Well, it's definitely ingredient-based. You want to use good ingredients, and it needs to be iced fucking cold, and... it's hopefully super dry. I mean, it's not supposed to taste like a glass of vodka.
And by the way, if you don't know your drink, let's say you really can't... You're nervous at the moment. Name a liquor. Like, I'd like a whiskey drink, please, that you make. Something, please.
But a well old-fashioned is not good.
No. Yeah. Don't tell Ben that, our business colleague.
No, I'm okay with it if it's you're right. Okay.
Well, in a lot of more elevated restaurants, the well liquor is actually pretty good. I mean, no one's serving turpentine these days. Not in a good restaurant. Mm-hmm. It's not junk. But also, though, I got to say, Ari Bemelmans and Anthony Bourdain, they serve those oversized martinis. I'm against... Okay, a martini is supposed to be small. They used to be called silver bullets for a reason, because that's why you could have a 3-martini lunch, because you had 3 of them. They were short, sharp shots. They were refreshing. You didn't have to have, 3 vats of vodka and then, drag yourself, to your nap. I mean, they were silver bullets. They were small martinis, and they stay cold. You get these big glasses by the time you get to the last sip. No one wants, warm vodka. It's disgusting.
That's true. All right, I think this is fun. I like the new format.
It's much smarter, much quicker, much more exciting.
You're extra smart today, Patrick.
Thank you.
It's only because we're talking about booze and drugs.
I know. It's like, how come those are always the stories we pick from Mike?
It's the one we like. All right, we have to go to a quick break, and then we'll be back with some more fun. Take it away, Vitor.
I'm Souther Teague of Maury Amargo and co-host of The Speakeasy on Heritage Radio Network. This episode is brought to you by the Sexton Single Malt Irish Whiskey, a new and unexpected modern malt for the everyman. The whiskey is made from 100% Irish malted barley, triple distilled for smoothness in copper pot stills, and consciously aged for 4 years in Oloroso sherry butts. My favorite part about the Sexton is that sherry influence from those Oloroso sherry butts. They're the large sherry barrels that have been used. And then the whiskey gets aged in them for 4 years, giving them this sort of nutty, almost savory quality. The copper pot still makes for an extremely smooth finish. I like it in a highball or just neat. Every time I have a sip, I want another one. So next time you're gathered with friends or posted up at your favorite bar, reach for The Sexton, the best-selling Irish single malt in North America. You can learn more at thesexton.com.
Okay, and we are back. You are listening to the Main Course OG on the Heritage Radio Network here in Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. We now have the Maillard reaction. So since I come up with the questions, I need some help this week. So I just started dating this guy, and he put on me for date number two. So I need great summer date spots in Brooklyn. Give me some advice. I'm new here.
Is he listening?
No.
Does he
no,
know you
no.
have a radio show?
No. Can I give you...
This is only the second date, Emily. No.
A third date spot? Can okay, I answer yeah. that by... Mise en première. Third okay. date.
Oh, good. Why third?
Perfect. Second date's too early. Second date, I pick Claro. She get treated well there. She go to a place where the chef comes out and is like, I'm a big fan of Heritage.
There's also
Patrick
a back,
Martins is a great
there's
guy.
There's an outdoor space in the back at Claro.
We know so another like exit dining. Strategy if he's blocking the front door.
Escape routes on all sides.
Or you could go something, Ethiopian or where you have to use your hands. Because that's very telling. As soon as you're going to get a lot of information out of that as soon as you're sharing food with
that's
your hands.
Good. I think second date, what about a museum date? You know, second date, there was activity date, you know, and then you're followed by dinner.
Okay, but if you're going to do that, I would say go to the city and go to the Met. They have a rooftop and you can go for drinks. Is this a weekday date?
Yeah, it's a weekday
date. So you can go after work. They have drinks on the roof.
MoMA's, that's good too. MoMA, the bar there is fantastic.
But she said Brooklyn. She said Brooklyn.
Yeah, I think we're staying in Brooklyn.
Libby works till 7 o'clock, so is the museum open late?
I think on Thursdays it is. The one of the nights it is. You have to look it up in the summer. Right.
And remember, if he orders a martini and doesn't call by name a brand of vodka or gin, lose him.
All He's right. like, I would okay. like a glass of wine, please.
Yeah. No, that's not going to fly. No, lose him. Yeah. 86.
This is great. Maybe I have to give updates every week. I'll be like, guys, how do we feel about this?
Roberta's make him pick you up at work so we can meet him.
No.
Yes.
We could ask him some questions.
That is not the second date we're looking for.
That's fourth?
Yeah.
Roberta's
fourth.
Is fourth?
Yeah. I'll be like, Roberta's come meet the
workroom.
Roberta's
is when it doesn't matter anymore. It's like, you already are bored by him.
No.
No, I liked Patrick's ideas, Clara, or summer. I mean, your date's tonight, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm kind of under summer, the wire
okay.
here.
Today's weather is good. I think somewhere outdoors.
I was wondering why you were all dressed up.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, the taco place at Domino Park.
That's the Danny Meyer taco truck.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's great.
At the Domino Sugar Factory.
Yeah, you're outdoors. It's.
You could drive away in case you really need an emergency escape route.
There's the rooftop at the Wythe Hotel where Renard is, and there's also the William Vale has a roof. I don't know, something outdoors.
That's a nice place to walk. Also, activity date, you walk down by the water there, go up to the Renard, or what's that massive hotel that has the rooftop?
The William Vale.
Right.
What about finger painting?
So we got a lot of different options.
$100, I mean $1,000 milkshake at Serendipity.
Yeah, see if he pays for it. Or if you have to pay for it, don't go on
a
third date.
It's over.
All right. You're like, I just want a milkshake.
$10 milkshake, you'd find it.
And
roll.
A salad.
Yeah. Nice plug for our guest here. Yeah. $10 milkshake at Fine and Raw.
All right.
Well, good question.
That was a good brainstorm. So I have a lot to think about after this. And now the last segment, the Weekly Grill. Danielle Sklar is the founder of Fine and Raw Chocolate in Bushwick. He is at the cutting edge of a new wave of artisanal chocolate making. We're very excited to have you in studio with us, Danielle. Thank you for coming. You had some great insights. Throughout the show already. So have you ever launched a chocolate bar into outer space?
This is such a Patrick question. I'm so glad that we're discussing this.
It was a long shot. But,
it just shows that we're such kindred spirits. I did work on a project. I can't divulge too much details, but there is a case of chocolate bars in outer space right now. Let me just say that.
What?
Yeah.
Really?
Yes, it's true.
Are they Willie Nelson's pot chocolates?
Is it
in the case there's one pot chocolate, you don't know which one it is.
Oh.
So which Elon Musk
aerospace company did we use?
Yes.
I can't divulge those details either. I signed an NDA.
Sorry. But why? What's the goal? To see if it melts? To see if it tastes better?
No, I think that, you know, Mike was talking about earlier us leaving the planet, everyone, so that when we do everything gets shut off the grid and we need to go into outer space, that there's chocolate there for us now.
Were there other products also launched into space with the chocolate?
I mean, there was some
graham crackers. Yeah, there was marshmallows. Are we making s'mores?
Yeah, there were one or two other things.
It's just all floating.
Frozen Pop Tarts. Let's get frozen products work very well in outer space. Just by the way, if anyone's going to do a similar kind of project,
there's so much junk in space. I mean, there is literally a debris belt. In space, there's so much broken satellites, just junk that we've been sending up there. Yeah, candy wrappers, plastic straws, those rings on the six packs. No, it's junk up there. It's not happy enough to poison our own planet. We're just throwing so much junk into space.
Where did you deliver it? Tell us a couple more things. I mean, how did you hear about this? Where did you deliver it to? Where is the chocolate now? When's it coming back?
I mean, oddly enough, it was. Advanced airplane paper technology that we got the. It's we're not entirely sure when it's coming back.
Are you gonna get it?
We're sort of just winging it at this point in time. So as things go on, we'll see how
it goes. You bring us over for a tasting if you do get a piece back?
Oh, that's a great idea. In fact, maybe I should do tours.
$10,000 milkshake for sure.
Absolutely.
$10,000 trips.
Daniel, you've been located next to us. We're Heritage, two doors down, and we don't know all these little secrets you have going on.
Oh, we're very busy. We're very busy in the back
there. We do actually have, funny you said that, a goat rack in space right now that Catherine engineered. I signed an NDA. I can't say anything
else about it. We should work together.
I liked pigs in space. Remember pigs in space?
Yes.
I love pigs in space.
That's what I should have said. Can you tell us about Willie Nelson? We got to ask that. Mike's exploding.
Well, we should try some of that and just go to space without the rocket. Let's go.
Willie Nelson, they have a really great brand, and they're very specific with the people who they work with. And they were looking for someone who they were absolutely sticky on the quality. So they're looking for super high quality, and then also. They didn't want to work with cane sugar because they've got, there's a lot of sustainable issues with cane sugar, never mind in Hawaii, I think that's where they're based. So they wanted an alternative, and we use predominantly coconut sugar, so they were really happy with that. And they just love our chocolates as well. They're big fans of Fine Roast. So they're like, you guys want to do a little marijuana chocolate with us? And obviously, the answer is yes. So what we did was we designed the chocolates for them and the products. And we now what we do is we send out the chocolates to the different states. They infuse the chocolate to the different states and do the final packaging there. And then you can get little 1 ounce Willie Nelson chocolate bars made by Fine and Raw. And they 10 milligram dose it.
Wow.
That's great. And it's marked Fine and Raw on the little packages and all
Yeah,
that?
So, yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
And does each state or each location have a different strain that they're using? Because you said it's done state by state that it's injected. It's not just coming from your central location.
Yeah, each state has their own local variety of...
Cool. You can collect them all.
Yeah. Wow, that's amazing. Good for you. Space, Willie Nelson's bus.
Yeah, a lot is happening.
You also probably has a chocolate in the subway right now, too, a piece or two. That's amazing, all these transportation.
We actually did have, the funny thing with the subway is Con Edison ran billboards all over the subway, and they showcased a local purveyor in Williamsburg who carries our chocolates. And the photo is one of their baristas, and in the back, this massive spread of Fine and Roll. For some reason, the Fine and Roll was in focus, so we were all over the subway.
Free advertising. Thanks, Con Edison. Yeah,
that's amazing.
Great job.
Another collection you have is the Classic Signature Collection. Tell us about the redesign and the intersection between art and chocolate.
Yeah, just massively excited about what the redesign that we're about to launch. It's it'll start going into stores the end of this month. And to a large degree, chocolate is about art. and confectionery work is predominantly about art. And to me, like, the pinnacle of confectionery work really is, well, I mean, pastry and then chocolate. So the natural extension to that when you're making products is the face of the chocolate. And the design is so telling to the experience. It's really challenging to do a redesign because you have to stay on brand and you have to say exactly what you want to say in a visual sense. That process is also really fun. I worked with incredible artists and illustrators and designers. It took us about several months to put everything together. Also, you know, there's like design parameters that we work with. We want the bars to be functional on the shelf as well as represent like who we are. And I think everyone that was on the project did a superb job. And
when you redesign, is it the label? Is it the shape of the chocolate itself? Is there like an imprint on the chocolate? Actually, or is it everything?
That's a interesting question, because with this one, what we did was we made the bars 40% thinner. And the reason why we made it 40% thinner was the mouthfeel and hence the flavor comes out faster and better. And the reason behind that is like the experience of chocolate is largely about the melt in your mouth. Mm-hmm. So chocolate melts below body temperature. It's one of the only foods that does that. So the quicker it melts, the faster the flavors get released. So we made the bars thinner. They're the same weight, which also expanded the length and the width of it, which gave us more surface area to do artwork on as well.
Oh, great. That's really cool.
So wait, right now, is it a cowgirl or?
No, that's the Bonnie's, the other collection that we have. This is the signature collection, which is the brown craft with the minimal aesthetic and floral and all that kind of stuff.
Okay, great. And one last question before we head out.
The events. That was one question, is the events. Because what were you going to ask?
What's the best chocolate movie ever made? The best movie made about chocolate.
Willy Wonka, of course. Yeah. The original one.
Yeah.
You guys do unbelievable events.
Yeah, so the
chocolate, which I've never been invited to. But no, just kidding. No, but you guys are legends.
We just don't let you in.
What's coming up?
So we actually have a really great event, and we teamed up with Finback Brewery and Dunwell Donuts, and we're doing it's going to be at Precious Metal in Bushwick down the road, and we're doing it's a tasting. So there's 4 chocolates, 4 donuts, 4 beers, and we paired everything all together. So you just go in and bounce off the walls on chocolate Sweet. Donuts.
Cool.
And
when is beers. It?
This is July 14th.
Bastille Day.
Yeah,
it's a Saturday.
So there's 2 rounds of tasting. One's at 2 p.m. One's at 5 p.m.
How do people sign up? How does my mother sign up? Our one listener. Just kidding.
And my husband.
Oh, right, yeah. Two.
You can go to our website, and there'll be details there.
Fine and Raw.
Yeah.
Daniel Sklar.
All right. Awesome. Well, thank you for being here, Daniel. Thank you for listening to Main Course OG. We had so much fun. Thanks, Vitor. And stay tuned for Tech Bites at 11 a.m.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
With me riding all around town with joy. Tell your heart, Raymond. Hello. Thank you.